Hi guys, Quentin here. I'm sat with Matt Allen from Pivot Power, or part of EDF Renewables. And we are, well, it's the morning after the Modo after party from the Energy Storage Summit. So our voices probably sound a bit leathery. And we're going to talk about all things Pivot Power, big batteries, and what's coming next. So Matt, thanks for coming on. And this is going to be a lot of fun. So
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And you've just come off a panel downstairs. Anything controversial on the panel?
It was a good conversation. I mean, I think there are a lot of questions around investor appetite, level of comfort, what revenue streams are looking like, you know, the actuals we're seeing together, or seeing today, which is great, but are those going to be sustainable for the future? A lot of things around CapEx increases and all that other fun stuff.
Everything's going up. And then, of course, this morning on the news, Ukraine and Russia is all sort of kicking off, which is going to make things interesting. Yeah. So we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about uplifting stuff. So what's Pivot Power? Who's Matt Allen? Let's do Matt Allen first, and then we're going to do Pivot Power, and then we're going to talk about what you guys are doing in the world. So who's Matt Allen?
Who's Matt Allen? That's a deep question. Still trying to figure himself out.
Oh.
Born and raised in a small little beach town in Northern California. All that really mattered to me in life was throwing a ball, which I'm still going to make a comeback at the age of 43 and be a starting pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. So that's the next phase. But played baseball through university, and then my arm gave out. And then I've been outside the U.S. and I decided, hey, it makes sense to go into the U.S. Peace Corps and did development work in Southeast Asia on the border of Cambodia and Thailand. For 3 years, came back, worked on the losing end of the John Kerry campaign.
So what was that? We've got to dig into that. What was that like?
It was.
Did you know you were going to lose?
Interesting.
Halfway through.
Well, when I say worked on the campaign, the reality was we were ripping out as much money from the state of California so we could go buy Ohio and Florida. Because that's the democratic process in the United States of America. So working on the campaign is a bit loose. And we then took all this money and rent all these vans and shoved old people into the vans to make sure that they would go vote. Of course, we'd ask them who are they going to vote for before we shoved them in the vans. But anyway, so yeah, democracy, fantastic. I don't have a better solution, though, so I'm not going to complain about that.
John Kerry in the States. And then what? When did you come over here?
And then about 15 years ago, came over here to do an MBA in public policy and at the University of Birmingham. I did it there because I didn't have to take a standardized test, which I would have horrifically failed.
The GMAT.
So
also, shout out to Birmingham as well. I didn't realize you're at Birmingham University. Yeah. Quasimodo is Birmingham's hottest company. It's our home, so.
Well, I mean, with the accent, you can obviously tell I'm Brummy, first and foremost, born and raised. But after I decided to stay in the UK, purely because the exchange rate was 2.1 and I could try to pay off my student loans as fast as possible. And 15 years later, I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old that asked me in the morning, Daddy, can I have some water? Which is very strange when your kids don't sound like you.
Did you have to do the citizenship test? The test you have to learn about 1066 and all these old things that even English people don't know.
I did, yeah. And I passed it. I can't tell you one question that was on it. But I'm now as British as you.
Well, yeah, welcome. Yeah,
and as Brummy as you, too.
Yeah, I should do a Brummy accent for that. But anyway, right. And then we haven't talked about energy yet. So when did you get into energy?
Yeah, so...
Or when did you get into energy?
Yeah. So I joined this... very odd company that you know a bit about. I wasn't really sure. Very eccentric CEO, this guy Michael Liebreich. Mm-hmm. And about a year before, this company New Energy Finance, before they were acquired by Bloomberg. And that was a pivotal moment, you know, for me.
In terms of gong this, for
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an industry that I'm pumped about. I want to be a part of this. And again, it gave me exposure to kind of a little bit of everything and helped me understand a little bit about all the disparate components and market economics and policy and supply chain and how it all comes together. And was there for almost 5 years and headed up the global commercial sales team. And
at Bloomberg and EF?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then I left. I joined Good Energy as commercial director there. Only lasted about a year. but then went on and worked for, ran a small renewables developer before the feed-in tariff was cut, and then laid everybody off and laid myself off. And then I joined Tempus Energy, where I met.
Shout out to Tempus for all of the capacity market stuff. And well, just, I mean, what a history of a company.
Absolutely. And he says with humility, you know, Sarah was great at recruiting amazing talent. And I met this guy, Michael Lawrence Clark, my co-founder and brother. And as we were leaving, I said, how bad do you work? We're having a beer, and he explained it to me. And I actually understood it. I didn't really. But I was like, wow, there's something to be said for being able to explain a complex thing in a way that you can understand. So
just need to, for anyone who's listening, that yes, there's a lot of sirens behind us, but I think it's okay. Izzy, producer, says it's okay. We're okay, sorry.
It's nothing we did.
No. They're not getting louder. That's what they put. Yeah.
And so I told Mikey famously that I could pimp you out, which is a very strange thing to say somebody when you want to start a company with them. But I think the big thing was, and there was a real chemistry between the two of us, and we started meeting with...
You're Mikey.
Yeah. And we both were very comfortable with our strengths and also our shortcomings. And we looked at, mainly the focus was behind the meter and our first project. And about 9 months later, we met our third brother, Matthew Bolton. And Matt Allen and Mikey Clark, MA and MC, met this guy, MB. And about 10 minutes in, I said, are you up for this? Matthew's like, what? And Mikey said, should we talk about this? I said, no. You know, A and C can only get so far. We need A, B, C, M, A, M, B, M, C. So are we going to do this? Like, is this how you make decisions? Yeah, kind of. The gods are telling us something. And jokingly, but there was such, you know, and there still is to this day, you know, the three of us, but it was everybody that came into the journey with us. We're just very, very comfortable. And we're comfortable at the front. We're making this up as we go. We don't know how to do this.
So there's three of you that started Pivot Power, is that right?
Yeah.
And Pivot Power, when did Pivot Power begin? Of course it was an idea and you've talked about it in the pub and things, but...
43 years ago. No.
It's a culmination of your life's work.
Yeah. Brought that question full circle. We were focusing on the behind the meter stuff, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, floor fell out of the frequency response market and put those numbers into the models, like, oh wow, negative returns, who wants those for Christmas?
Because you guys did the Arsenal battery, right? The Tesla system, one of the biggest Tesla systems at the time, behind the meter Arsenal. It's a big project.
It was 3 years literally from the day that I met Mike Lloyd, the stadium manager I caught up with a couple months ago for dinner at a conference, to us cutting a ribbon at this beautiful 3 megawatt battery. I had my kids there at the time. I was crying my eyes out, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty special, but man, it was complicated.
Do you get tickets? Do you get free tickets now?
We do. We go. Yeah, we haven't been for a while. I'm not even a huge football fan, ironically, but it was so cool to make it happen. And there was a real validation of, like, we did it. You know, we hadn't closed a deal, we hadn't closed a door. You know, but we got a project across the line. It wasn't easy. You know, putting a multi-million pound system off balance sheet that's kind of flammable and has some risks in a 400 million pound stadium. Lawyers had a field day with that one.
Yeah, I bet.
But we got it across the line, and right around that time, we're kind of like, man, this is not really scalable. And we were thinking that, well, there's a lot of spare capacity at the transmission system, and what the DNOs are constrained, and how are we going to electrify transport when there isn't really much juice laying around at that level? And it all really just kicked off with a conversation with a few incredible people at National Grid. And it was this kind of right place, right time. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of luck that goes into all of this stuff. But, you know, we all of a sudden just started running and downing, invested in starting this new company. So to answer your question, Pivot Power, so the acquisition was about 2.5 years ago, and we had
the EDF acquisition.
Yeah. And so Pivot has been incorporated for about 4 years now.
Okay, so you started 4 years ago, and we touched on it there for a second, but what was the vision when you started this thing? Is it about building big? Is it about building fast? Is it about building with transport in mind? What are you aiming for?
I don't know who came up with this phrase. It doesn't really matter. A distributed lithium ion to Norwig. And I thought that
that's good.
Brilliant.
That's very good.
I thought that was brilliant. It's like 2 gigawatts of batteries dotted all around the country that National Grid in the control room could play the piano, turn this down. It doesn't have the duration of large pumped hydro, but it had the same characteristics and some better characteristics, you know, the distributed nature of it and so on. And so it was this kind of like, you get to volume, you get to scale, and then that gets really, really interesting in the control room. Potentially, we don't know. We're not even at that scale yet. But I think that's where this stuff will get really interesting, is once we get to, you know, volume, how can you really use a decentralized asset of large disparate components to really balance the system and allow more renewables to come on the system. So that was the battery co, and then the wire co, which, as far as I'm concerned, we take a big wire and we throw it over the fence at the National Grid substation. We run it to a location. That location could be a bus depot. It could be a corporate fleet. It could be a Tesla supercharger. It could be any place. And because one of the biggest issues is not, can we buy an electric vehicle? Can we buy chargers? Sure. There's just not enough capacity to charge these things.
Yeah.
So that is the big piece that we're looking to address on the kind of private wire component.
So you guys, for people who don't know Pivot, you guys build big batteries, right? And other stuff, but as you mentioned. But really your core is building a big portfolio of sites that you've got that you're going to work your way through. In fact, you've already built a couple. What have you already built?
Yeah, so our first two... first one in Oxford, the Cali substation, which is part of the Energy Superhub Oxford, ESO, which becomes very confusing because not the ESO.
Yeah.
And then the second one is in Kemsley in Sittingbourne, Kent. And those are now operational online.
Lithium-ion batteries built by...
Lithium. We have Wärtsilä and Samsung Cells for those first two. We also have, as part of an Innovate UK project, an Invinity flow system that's coming online very shortly. And then the private wire component in Oxford is, we have 4 megawatts going live early April. So 2 going to Tesla, 2 to Fastned for one of the UK's largest charging hubs at a Redbridge park and ride in Oxford. And also looking at bus opportunities very quickly around the corner in Oxford. So this kind of private wire piece in Oxford coming together. We have broken ground and are currently building our next two systems. Now those first two were 1 hour duration. Our next two in Coventry and Bustleholme, Northwest Birmingham, we've pivoted. That's the second one. Ding.
Dong.
Yeah. I've moved to 2 hour duration, which was sooner than I think we expected. But it does make sense, and we're seeing more kind of 2 hour, not long duration storage, but longer. And so those, we've broken ground there. Those again are 50 megawatt systems. And then many others to come. I mean, that's the big focus for us.
I remember when the acquisition happened, because it was big, right? This, I mean, of course everyone talks about building lots of massive pipelines and big assets now, but 2.5 years ago, it was kind of novel what you guys were doing. Well, it was novel. And at the time, I think it was like there's like gigawatts and gigawatts of pipeline that you've got to build. And what are the numbers? What are you planning to build? And is it EDF who's gonna finance these?
Yeah. The funny thing is, we didn't even have a website. We got a website, and it was, I think, a week before this press release went out, because we got a call from National Grid that they told us that Pivot Power, after 4 or 5 months being incorporated, that we were the largest connection holder by sites in the entire country. I think EDF was number 2, Centrica, Ørsted, and of course Pivot Power. We had 45, 46 at the time, which was kind of like, oh my God, what is going on right now? And we had a press release that went out, and it said 2 gigawatts battery storage to be deployed, requiring 1.6 billion pounds for the private wire and the battery component. I don't even know how many zeros are in a billion. And we got a lot of attention for 5 minutes, and it was kind of cool and kind of annoying. And it was like, we get back to doing stuff. And I don't regret I remember when I saw it, it was like, man, these Bragawatt developers.
Yeah.
That's what we've become. Bragawatt guys. Like, look at the big numbers. We didn't have 1.6 billion pounds. We had enough to pay our rent and our payroll for the next couple of months. But I'm glad that we did it, because that's the language we should be talking about. If we're not talking about gigawatts and billions, we're having the wrong conversations.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you're going too slow.
This is a transition. You know, this is a crisis. We need to be talking about big numbers. And if this is infrastructure, those are the kind of numbers. And so, anyway, but going back to your question, when we went out to raise the first $250 million, the request was to have that go into the kind of top co of the company to fund our first assets and then build more and whatever that looks like.
Before EDF Renewables bought you, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so EDF Renewables filled out the term sheet wrong, and they suggested an acquisition of us, which was, you know, at the time, it's like, is this the right? That's not what we were trying to do. It wasn't about remaining independent. I mean, if somebody puts $200 million in, we would have owned a sliver of it. But it was the right thing. I'm not saying that to win hearts and minds of, you know, EDF Renewables, but it was the right place for it to be. 3 months, 4 months after the acquisition, this COVID thing hit. A company cares about its people, and that means a lot. They are nice. That means a lot. And, you know, these are people, friends, family that I care a lot about. And it's been amazing to see people's careers, you know, develop and, you know, a large organization and opportunities and so on. And yeah, I mean, when you lay on your deathbed, I'll think about many other things. I'm not going to think about how many batteries we built. I mean, think about, you know, did we allow people to do amazing things? Did we believe in them? Did we back them? Did we help support and build their careers? And so I think, you know, on that basis, it was the right place to be. I think we're in a super, super exciting place right now.
Just coming back to so you went out to market to raise £250 million. It's a big number. So, yeah, of course, as you say, when you were raising that kind of money, you lose your independence anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what's the difference? Yeah.
That's a big number, right? So you went out to raise the money. I assume back then you pitched to everybody, so the big banks and whatnot. What was that experience like back then? Because this was numbers that people hadn't really talked about, and you were going big and you were saying, I want it now.
Yeah.
So how was that?
It was slightly surreal.
And this is what, 2017, 2018?
No, this was 20. Our first investor meeting was in January 2019.
Okay, right.
And we met with around 40 institutional funds, infrastructure funds, corporate strategics. Morgan Stanley was representing us, and, you know, meetings with everybody. Everybody loved it. First meeting, second meeting. You know, stuff that sits at the foundation, the energy transition, big batteries, electric vehicle charging infrastructure. They all loved it. But the big M word came out, merchant.
Oh,
merchant. And in one meeting, I was told by Morgan Stanley, don't ever say that again. That sounds disrespectful and condescending. And maybe it was meant to. But I was like, what is
Where
it, merchant?
Where did the word merchant come from? I mean, this is so silly. Everybody says it like they know what it is. Like, okay, we can describe it, and blah, blah, blah. It's about trading and it's about wholesale markets. But really, where does it come from? I've never heard of it before, this silly industry that we're in.
Yeah.
So
I mean, at the end of the day, what isn't merchant? You buy a house, exactly. That's merchant. You built this hotel, that was merchant. You built a pub. What do you think if, you know, you only sold 70 pints that night, the government was going to buy 30 pints, you know, for you to top up, you know, your missed pint sales if it was a pub?
The barter system was merchant. We're probably going to have someone write in or comment and say, economics or something says that it's merchant. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I understand it. I mean, especially you have fiduciary responsibilities, you know, pension funds and so on to protect investments, and, you know, different things have different risk profiles and so on. I mean, I think one of the personal benefits I have, I don't have an investment background. I don't have a legal background. I don't have an engineering background. I don't know. So I just understand a little bit of all the disparate parts. But I think what it comes down to is you can grab every single chart and kind of support the narrative. But do you think that more renewables are going to be built in the future? Yes. Well, we've committed net zero and so on. Do you think that electric vehicles are going to be rolled out faster than we ever expected? Yes. Okay. So would you like to invest? And it doesn't, I mean, it gets more complicated than that, I guess. But you do have to believe a bit of conviction. The rest of the stuff will kind of come together. But some of these things have become fundamental truths. And I don't know anybody that disagrees, you know, the pace and the other.
Just the Excel sheet is too complicated to put together. Yeah. That's the thing that holds it up, isn't it?
Yeah. I think Mikey disconnected, uninstalled Excel on my laptop pretty early on because I would just yell at these things. How do the models work?
So these guys, so you were pitching to them and in January 2019, and they were really excited. And then you said, you told them, you know, you're going to trade with these batteries and it's not going to be guaranteed revenue streams. They're used to CFDs and all that stuff. And then what, did they get cold feet? Or?
No, we did. We had advancing other conversations with funders, but there was still a lot of concern. Mm. And when EDF put forward, I would love to say that we had 40 offers on the table. We didn't. We absolutely didn't. There were people that really, really wanted to, but they realized their investment committees, you know, wasn't going to be able to go through. So it was October 31st, 2019, 4:36 p.m. I definitely didn't think it was going to happen. Even at that point, it was kind of done for a couple of weeks and you're waiting for final things to get signed. And it was a pretty cool moment.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was the coolest thing was going home. We had a glass of champagne, everybody went out, and I went home and I picked up my kids and we went trick-or-treating. And I floated, but I floated because I was able to be with them again, you know, and for the first couple of years of life, I wasn't there. But it was also the thing, it was like, holy shit, this very average at best, like barely graduated from anything, doesn't understand, could pull this off. And, you know, so when it comes to kids, when it comes to, you know, company, it's like, to be able to realize that, like everybody wants to say, you can do anything. My son, a couple years ago, he was gonna be an astronaut. And I think when he was six, he came home and he said, Daddy, I'm not gonna be an astronaut. Why? And he realized the numbers, only like 20 people that were astronauts. And it was like, wow, we do get to that point at some point when we tell ourselves that we can't be an astronaut. And that kind of sucks. So we should all be astronauts. But you know, it is, one of those things that there are many, many attributes and characteristics about America that grind me. But one of the things I do love is we're too dumb and naive to think we can't pull stuff off.
Yeah, there's a if it's not me, then who else?
Right? Yeah.
Attitude, which is incredible. So then EDF Renewables came in, injected capital into the company, and you started building these assets. And so I've got to ask you the question. You know what's coming, Matt, because I asked you before. So if you've got all these sites and you've got EDF backing you, there's such an opportunity. We agree. We're in the space. We like speed, right? If you're building assets, if you can get assets built right now and you've got backers and you've got sites and you've got connections and it kind of makes sense, then why wait?
Yeah.
So my question to you is, why wait? Is Pivot Power waiting? Or is it just a natural cycle of how you have to do it? You have to do one project at a time. It just takes time and blah, blah, blah. That's not a direct... I'm not saying anything bad about Pivot Power here. I'm questioning if you've got 2 gigawatts, why not do them all at once?
This podcast is done. I'm out of here. Yeah. No. It's absolutely a fair question. I have no problem with that question. And it's not cautiously optimistic. And that's not just EDF. There's a lot of money that has been raised that is desperately looking for projects. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of excitement and there's a lot of activity that's taking place. Now, within 2 years, and we had... for our next two projects, which will hopefully be closing internally, you know, that will take the kind of investment made over 120, 130 million, in 2 years, you know, mm-hmm. from EDF Renewables. That's could it be more? Sure. Should it be more? Maybe. But there is a demonstration of a commitment to build. It could be faster, but there are pieces to the whole chain. One of them, connection dates, you know, with National Grid and lining those up. If we turn around and are going to say, hey, we want to do 20 projects, 50 mega gigawatt tomorrow, that wouldn't be able to happen. Those connection dates, those are lined up and at different stages. So we're kind of reliant on that kind of interface. The supply chain, needless to say, is a bit of a challenge, whether it comes, you know, CapEx and costs, and ability to deliver, you know, timings and so on. So there are a lot of other factors that if you had the ambition and the commitment and the financial bank, like run. there would still be kind of a phasing, you know, to it. So I guess a long-winded answer to say, I am optimistic that we will accelerate, that we will be building at volume, you know, this kind of 2 per year build out, that starts to ramp up a bit. You know, you would say, look, the actuals, the outturns, real financial numbers, they're amazing right now. It's a no-brainer. But then, you know, you look at it like, well, is that going to be the case for the next 20 years? No. It feels a bit like we're in Las Vegas right now. And it shouldn't. It shouldn't. You know, next year may not be a great year for batteries. I hope it's not, obviously. I don't think it will be. But there is a lot of volatility inside of volatility. We rely on volatility in terms of...
There's probably a mathematical equation in there somewhere. Yeah. So,
two negatives make a positive? Not the volatility is a negative.
VIX or something. I don't know.
So
you guys, you're doing roughly two a year. It's like 100 megawatts, 200 megawatts, something like that. That's the plan.
We moved to, 100 megawatts, 200 megawatt hours, which we're building right now. And then looking at the same, you know, this, we have more projects that we're advancing through the pipeline, and also a very, very interesting trend, not just for us, but for others, is looking at co-location hybrid with a lot of our connections. Okay. So looking at solar plus storage. And so we have a couple sites back end of this year that will be going to investment committee, and kind of that model is being finalized. But that seems to be a big trend, whether it's retrofitting of existing generation with storage or kind of new build generation plus storage, mainly solar. Solar plus storage.
It's funny, it's a different model, isn't it? Because you, there's two ways to think about it. You've got a big battery and you're going to put, well, the way that I feel we talk about it as an industry in co-location is we've got a solar farm and we're going to put a battery on it to smooth the solar farm and dispatch it later in the day or whatever. Yeah. In my head, and having thought about it and speaking to colleagues, I feel like it should be the other way around, which is we've got a big battery and we're going to use solar to charge the battery cheaply, rather than we've got a big solar park, we're going to use storage to solve the solar problem. It's kind of the other way around. Basically, you're solving electricity supply chain to your battery is being de-risked and to zero. But obviously, the cost of capital, blah, 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 boring stuff. But you get the idea, right? I just wonder, how are you thinking about the hybrid co-location model?
The way that you described it, and I would love to build a, you know, an online simulation, I gamify this whole thing. But if you think of SimCity, and you were to build a city, and then you have to build the energy infrastructure stuff, you would dot a bunch of batteries all around the city, all different corners and so on. And then you'd start putting some generation to charge up those batteries, and then you get this kind of virtuous circle of how that all comes together. So I agree with your approach. I guess it really, a lot of it comes down to some of the regional aspects of, SUAS, DUAS, different charges in where that network, that node is, but also kind of wholesale prices during those periods. And then, you know, some of the products and services, ancillary or other, that you can do with the battery. So it may pivot over time. Number 3.
Dong. Oh, is it ding? Is it dong? What am I saying? Ding, dong. It's a ding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
It was a late night.
It was a late night.
But I think that it can. I mean, it's funny that when we came up with the name Pivot, it was Matthew and I, not you, Mikey. And we're like, Burn. Oh my God, pivot power. Originally, it was going to be Paradigm Power. We're like, oh my God, that's terrible. And Pivot Power is like, wow, there's no way that's available. And we went on a company's house and it was. But it's like, man, what better? It was just hilarious because we were pivoting away from behind the meter storage into big utility scale stuff. But that does kind of describe our industry, battery storage, and even the generation stuff. It, you know, we could have called it floor power, predictable revenue power, government subsidy backed power. But it's pivot
positive
power.
NPV power.
So
I want to get a couple more questions in, because I know you have a lot of opinions in general on everything. So what's going on? Two things. What do you love that's going on at the moment? Big change in the energy industry that's going on, particularly in our world. And then what really pisses you off? Let's do the love first, though, and then we can double down on the... we're gonna edit yeah. this long pause. Yeah. No, I'm just gonna fill this long pause.
I think part of the issue is that, you know, we surround ourselves in echo chambers of, you know, from a, obviously from a work perspective, and from a, actually most of my friends I work with. Maybe I should get some friends if I don't want
to. That feeling when you're like, I'm only 31. I've been told there's a point in your 30s where you look around and you're like, I don't actually have any friends. It's just people I work with.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I think, and the reason I was pausing is because it's like everybody's optimistic that this is happening. And there's a different feeling of optimism, and that this is, that we can do this, and this transition is going to happen, and so on. But I don't know if that's just the people that I work with that are in this industry, because the rest of the general public, which actually is the second part to your question, is this is a climate crisis, and this needs to be a participatory sport that everybody is on the pitch involved in playing. And we can't have people on the sideline, and it can't be us talking about, you know, and so it serves as squiggly lines and complicated stuff. It needs to be understood by the masses. The reason I loved that Arsenal project, and where I feel like the heart of Vivid came from, was the first meeting that I had was I pitched an idea to this guy at Arsenal, which was about putting solar on the roof or battery in the basement, but said you could either fund it yourself or we could get, you know, a private equity firm to fund it. But there's a third option. He said, what's that? I said, we get the fans to own and operate it. Or not operate it, to own it, and be a part of the direction of travel of energy independence and sustainability and so on. He's like, that's cool, let's do that. I was like, oh shit, I don't, what is this, a crowdfunding platform? I didn't know what I was doing. But he loved that. And I loved that he loved that. And it kind of snowballed into it. You know, Downing, who funded it, there was the Downing crowd. So it was a realistic concept, and we could refinance it through as a bond, but we pivoted.
Ding dong.
Ding dong. Both there. And, but what I loved about that was the opportunity to bring people on the journey. And if you can have a father, son, or, you know, assuming a football match, have a conversation, and they're under the Jumbotron, a big, you know, iPad screen of a battery, and showing, you know, how it was filled up, you know, pre-match time, and how it's being dispatched. And, you know, if that child had a 100-pound bond that was given to, you know, by a grandparent, whatever, like that becomes really, really, really exciting. And right now, this whole transition, it's like us, you know, the people working in this industry, yeah. But the rest of the people are kind of, hey, industry, I hope you pull it off.
Yeah, yeah. It's too complicated, because there's too many complicated words, and it's things like, I don't know, our whole energy industry is crazy complicated, and in many cases it's to serve itself in being more complicated.
Absolutely.
And we need to be able to communicate it to everybody.
Our relationship with it is very basic. I mean, we walk up to the wall and we press a button, it goes on. It's very predictable. We don't have to deal with outages much, knock on wood. But you know, I'm not saying it has to be deeper, it's not the most interesting, exciting concept, but you know, that's one of the only links commonalities that Arsenal has with its fans, electricity. So, you know, how can you use those things to create those connections, that understanding, that awareness? And you know, people, I'm not delusional. People go to be entertained and see guys run around and kick a ball. But if that conversation can happen for 10 seconds about, huh, that's interesting, there's a battery in the basement, it's filled up with wind and solar, and it's used during the match. Huh, okay, cool. Oh, and that's how it makes money. It fills up during cheap times and pushes out during expensive times. It's a big sponge, fills up with cheap water and pushes out expensive water. That's actually really all I understand. Other people explain it to me, I think. But, yeah.
But it creates a level of intuition, which you don't need the complicated long paragraphs to explain it. It's an intuition thing. It's a sort of, it's pub chat.
Yeah. Right?
It needs to be pub chat to really get the hearts and minds of these people.
Pitch it to a parent. You know, that's my mom, when I was explaining to her what her crazy delusional son was doing. I mean, she said, so yeah, the wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine, so we need batteries. Like, and I've told that story 100 times because, yeah, that's basically, yeah. Like, it's not wildly more complicated than that. It's pretty basic in its concept, but
not
that's why we need this stuff.
Either.
Oh my God.
Oh, you know, when the sun goes away, that's when we do this thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, going to our first site, is double stacked 40-foot shipping containers. So it's like, wow, it's beautiful. What's going on, Mikey, Adrian? How does this work? But it's not a big, you know, wind turbine and 50 acres of solar. It's, you know, a bunch of boxes in a field.
The containers thing's funny. Like, it's become normal, and we think about it as a normal thing. But I mean, it didn't have to be this way. I don't know. If you asked me 10 years ago, what's a grid scale battery going to, well, I probably wouldn't even be able to describe it. But I wouldn't have said it comes in a load of shipping containers and you stick them in a field.
Yeah.
But hey ho, that's the world we live in now.
Yeah.
Last question, Matt, and then I'll put you on the spot here. Anything you want to get off your chest? This is not a confession, by the way. This is not. Is there anything that you want to raise? You can actually file a formal complaint with Modo right now if you want. No, is there anything that you think we need to discuss or talk about more, or something that you've been pondering? The answer no is also okay.
I don't know if this is an age thing or being a parent thing, or a deep level of imposter syndrome, maybe a combination of all of them. But like, maybe it's, I'm not trying to lecture, but like, play to your strengths and be proud of those things. And like, own the shit out of your weaknesses, your shortcomings, things you haven't done, probably never will do. And I just, it's funny because I think that with Mikey, Matthew, myself, and then everybody came into it. Like, we never talked about it. We never wrote down, this is what I'm good at, and this is what I'm not good at. And then you try to, but like, in building a company, I think that that's like an ingredient that's just so important. And I think if we all did that from a society standpoint, you know, just think how much better we would be. Like, I'm good at some things, and I'm not good at many things. And that's okay. I actually kind of did this at the start, and things I'm good at. And I had like 4 or 5 things. I was like, decent chat, kind of confident, you know, American accent. Worked in this industry for 10 years, so I know a lot of people. I haven't screwed people over, so maybe I could activate my network, whatever that means. And then I had 4 sheets of things that I wasn't good at. I was like, oh, wow.
Let's do it, Matt. Let's go to the...
Yeah, yeah. But in meeting Mikey, and I went back and looked at it, and then Matthew and everybody else, and you know, now I'm perfect. I am absolutely perfect. Please don't cut that out as just I am perfect. But
that would be the soundbite we put on LinkedIn. We need to do this at Modo. We should probably get everyone to we should just cry and write down all the things we're not happy about ourselves. Maybe we'll just get it all out.
Yeah, yeah. The team has seen me cry far too many times. But I think that let's be honest. Let's be vulnerable. Let's all these things that I think that and I've really enjoyed. You know, if you met me 5 years ago, very different. I think, Pivot allowed me to, it accepted me for everything. And in return, it was just really cool to see this kind of acceptance. Like, we celebrated mistakes. We'd pick each other up and say, awesome. I used to have people come up with ideas. I forgot to sign a grid connection or something like that. And he was super worried. We had an intern and she sends Outlook invites to Mike, when somebody else grab a whiteboard and write down all the dates. And I was sitting there like, wow, they didn't want Mikey to mess up again. And it was like, we have your back, buddy. And it was so cool to just see, there's been so many other times where I've just been sitting there like watching. I love when things go wrong because people put on their Superman, Superwoman capes, and I'm like, Jesus, look at this. Can I get you a coffee or anything?
You get the good out of everybody turns up.
Yeah, and it's so powerful and special to be a part of. We were either the best equipped or worst equipped for lockdown. I just loved being in that environment with those people every day. Where I used to try to get there early to make the coffee. That was just, I loved knew that. I didn't tell anybody, but it was just to try to, be there to support people and give them high fives and tell them we can do this. And so anyway, that wasn't getting something off my chest. I didn't want to get that. Well, anyway, maybe because, I feel early stage startup companies, you really, and it does start with the person who's running the show You're a very talented guy, I have no doubt, but I'm pretty sure you have some shortcomings, and I hope that your colleagues know that.
I think we have a pretty firm understanding of many of those.
Good. Good.
All right, cool. Matt, I just want to say thanks for coming on. I know you've got loads of people to meet today, and finding time to do this is very generous of you, so thank you.
Well, I'm just going to fall asleep on your sofa.
Someone did actually stay on the sofa last night. That's a long story. And we are going to... We'll be keeping an eye on Pivot Power. I guess if people want to know more about Pivot Power, we'll put the website in the comments. Let us know if you're watching this, what you think. If you've got any more questions, I'm sure we can pass them on. And see you in the next episode. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you very much.